Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's transplant program and becoming an organ donor is available online at umm.edu/transplant. The murder of a six-month-old child, Joniela Watkins, in New York, really has grabbed...
In Chicago.
What did I say?
New York.
Well, I'm sorry. Too much going on here today in Chicago. I beg your pardon. Of course, it was a travesty and rocked Chicago because of all the killings taking place there. And on the heels of the murder of 15-year-old Hadiya Pendleton, who had marched in the inaugural day parade and was murdered as an innocent victim at a bus stop in Chicago. And the murders taking place in Chicago only outnumber actually the murders taking place in Baltimore by 10, even though the population in Baltimore is barely 23% of the population in Chicago. We are joined here to discuss what is going on. Corey Brooks joins us from Chicago. He is pastor of the New Beginnings Church in Chicago, spokesperson for the family of Joniela Watkins. We're joined in studio by Lamar Darnell Shields, president of the Urban Leadership Institute, founder of Praise Academy, who grew up in Chicago, and he's a bi-city man, Chicago and Baltimore. Donya Johnson joins us once again. She's a junior at the Baltimore Freedom Academy, member of the Intersection, a youth program here in Baltimore, and gave a very impassioned plea here on the show just the other week about what it means for a young woman growing up in the inner city and her family with fear of violence every day in her life. And we're joined by Bonita Spikes, Bonita's not there yet? Okay, she'll be here in a minute. And so, folks, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much.
Pastor Corey Brooks, I know you only have a few minutes with us here. It's about a quarter after, so let me start with you. I just want you to talk about what has happened since the news, what you can say to us about the family and the situation, since you're clearly close to them and speaking for them.
Well, the family's, under a lot of duress, a lot of stress. There's still a lot of frustration and hurt. They haven't caught the perpetrators of this hideous crime. And, you know, they're really dealing with it the best way they can. You know, in words, a mother has lost
I'm sorry, Reverend Pastor. We are you're breaking up. It's hard to hear you online.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you better. Yes.
You know, they just recently were married, and it's really tough.
Let me ask you all, this is a very broad question here, but I really want to know what you all think. And Pastor, you can begin, and then look over to Lamar Darnell Shields and to Donya Johnson. And Bonita Spikes has just joined us. Bonita Spikes is a husband whose husband Michael was murdered in 1994, has been a guest on the show, who is now a murder victim's family member organizer for CASE, which is Maryland Citizens Against State Executions, pardon me. And Bonita, welcome. Good to have you with us. What is going on socially, culturally, pathologically in some ways in our communities? The intensity of the violence that's taking place. I mean, how would you describe what is at its core, Pastor Brooks?
Well, we believe here in Chicago, what we're experiencing is social ills, spiritual ills, educational and economic ills, and all of those things happen to be going on in one area. And whenever you have those four ills, those four major problems in one area, then it gives birth to violence. And that's exactly what we're seeing on a daily basis and a consistent basis. And until we start to deal with those four issues, we're never going to eradicate the violence that we're dealing with here in Chicago on such an extreme level.
Lamar?
Yeah, you know, I would like to chime in. How you doing, Pastor? This is Lamar Grubb on 79th and Green, man, from the South Side, brother.
Bless you.
How are you? And I'm going to see you in 2 weeks because I'll be in Chicago. Mark, this thing hit me so hard. I received a text message maybe 3 weeks ago from some childhood friends about Hadiya. You know, my daughter's name is Hadiya.
I know that. I was thinking about
and
that.
And I received this text message, Mark, and I'm wondering who's sending me a text message about a funeral services. I go on to read, and I'm starting to read, and I look, And Hadiyah is a childhood friend of mine's daughter, a guy named Nate Anthony Pendleton.
Are you serious?
And so I'm blown away, and I'm thinking about growing up in Chicago, and Pastor knows about this. You know, we fight so hard to get ourselves together, and our parents look out for us and make sure that we're on the right path, and then... But we don't think that our children are going to be affected. So it hit me hard, not only because my daughter has the same name. I didn't even know he had a daughter. Because, you know, now I'm living in Chicago, living in Baltimore. But it really hit me hard. You know, Chicago is just on fire. And people are asking me all the time, you know, how did you make it out? You know, it. I love my city. You know, Common is from Chicago. Kanye West, you know, folks, I grew up with Common, and we're looking for strategies. And you're going to have Phillip Jackson on here. This has been a fight my entire life, and I think what got me out, it was sports and academics. You know, played baseball a lot, you know, went to schools on the south side of Chicago. But this has been going on forever. When I talk about gangs, you know, when gangs was coming to Baltimore and I was trying to prepare Martin O'Malley then at the mayor, you know, when I saw the remnants of it here, I said, man, we got to get on this really, really fast, because my entire life, Chicago has been gang written. And the pastor was on, you know, on point. It's certain pockets of communities they're starting to feel the brevity of this. You know, this young lady who went to a great young, you know, high school. We're talking about the, you know, Hadiyah, who went to King High School at the time. Mark, you wouldn't pay anybody to send their children to that school. But King just turned around. I mean, it shifted from a low-performing school to a high-performing school. And then to see the six-month-old, you know, it has to stop. You know, people like Michael, Father Flager, who I know, I grew up with Father Flager at St. Sabina. You know, Minister Farrakhan is there. You know, Jesse, the Jesse Jackson. All these people are there, and we're still trying to figure out why can't we get it right. You have one community, one city with all these individuals, but quite often, I think what's happening in the past, I'm sure knows being a pastor, people have to stop working in silos. You know, it just can't be at my church we do this, and in this school, in my neighborhood, we have to sort of work together. And I have not seen that enough in the city that I've come from, where people are coming together as a collective, and it's normally happening at a late time when this beautiful child, 6 months, you know, lost her life. So I'm glad to see that people are starting to have more conversations, but have to move from conversations to sort of action.
Before we turn back to the pastor, before he has to go out, Donya, I'm glad you're back in the studio with us. And I'm as a young woman, as a teenager, seeing this stuff. I mean, what were your talk about your thoughts about what you think is going on?
Like this gentleman said, you know, all the things that people had growing up, like recreation and like tight-knit communities and all that stuff that makes really great communities and really great people who come together, we don't have as much of that. All our recreation is being cut down. Education budget is being cut down. All that stuff that like has a really big impact on how you grow up is being cut down. So, of course, it's going to breed violence and more violence and broken homes and hurt communities. That's the product of that.
In a minute, I want to ask a question because of something you said in the show last week, and talk about something I think really deep and deeper on some levels when you talked about what happened when you witnessed somebody getting beaten up and what your father said to you when he was in jail. And I want you to tell that story in just a moment again. Pastor, would you want to leave us with some thoughts before you have to go? I know you have to leave in a few minutes. Pastor? Pastor Brooks, you there? So, all right, we're waiting for the pastor to return. Bonita, you with us?
I'm here.
Oh, hi, Pastor. I'm sorry. Pastor Brooks, I know that you have to leave in a minute or two. Just want you to leave us with some thoughts about the family, where they are, how her father is, and what has been the latest news we might have missed.
Well, first of all, let me apologize. I'm trying to do two things at once.
I'm with sure you are.
At present, trying to make funeral arrangements, but I wanted to definitely be on your show because it's definitely important that the people in Baltimore know that we appreciate here in Chicago, that you all are caring about what's going on and you're talking about it. So I definitely wanted to be on the show, and I apologize.
That's all right. Don't do it. You do not have to apologize.
Okay. But I do want to say this, that the mother is trying to cope. It's very, very difficult. The father is presently still in the hospital trying to recover from his wounds. Emotionally, he's very distraught, but physically he's getting stronger every day. And one of the things that I want to make sure that I say on this station so your listeners in Baltimore and around America who are listening to you, is that oftentimes in Chicago, a lot of times seems like they want to make every shooting a gang shooting, and that's not always the case. And I wanted to make sure that I lift up the fact that this father was a young brother and who happened to be changing the diaper of his baby. Now, come on, you know, how many brothers do we know who are changing the diapers of their babies, first of all? And then secondly, not only he was also, they just recently got married. And so that needs to be commended. And then on top of that, the mother, this is not some welfare mother. This is a 20-year-old young sister who was at work. And so this is not the typical average neighborhood young family. This is a family that was striving to do better. And I want people to know that, and I want to celebrate that, because continually and consistently here in Chicago, the press is trying to make it seem as if he was in a gang, which he was not, that he was some evil guy because he had a past record, which he was not. And so I just wanted to speak to that, and thank you once again for allowing me to be on your show.
Reverend Corey Brooks, we'll look forward to talking to you next week. And please, from all of us here on the Mark Steiner Show and our family here, to our deepest condolences to the family.
Absolutely, we will do that. Thank you. If you ever need me on the show again, just give us a call in Chicago. And congratulations, Baltimore, on y'all Super Bowl win.
We're going to work on those Bears when I come in town, brother.
Pray for the Bears.
Thank you, Corey Brooks. We appreciate you being with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Pastor of the New Beginnings Church in Chicago, spokesperson for the family of Joni Law Watkins. And Bonita, you were about to say something, and I have a question for all of you, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm from Chicago, Illinois. My husband, Michael, and I both were raised that violence would not beget violence. And actually, the Black Stone Rangers and the Panthers were out when we were growing up, and my mom went out on the corner and told them, my sons will not be joining your gang. And they literally would be robbing somebody if my mother went by to grab her bag and take her, walk her up her steps, and then start back the gangbang.
I think
I've worked with murder victim families in Baltimore City and Prince George's County, all over Maryland, but particularly those two spots. And I sit on so many church pews with mothers who have lost their children to violence. And part of the thing I think about is that we don't catch our young people, our troubled young people, and offer mental health. And that's one of the things I see wrong. But there's a lot. It's a lot of things wrong. But that's one of the things that I've been thinking about recently.
You know, one of the things I think was important, what the Reverend said, and then we'll open the phones here, let our listeners in this, is that I was reading the Chicago papers today after this killing, and clearly, like, the Sun-Times had this whole article about his gang past, about the father we're talking about, the fact that he had a gun charge a few years back, but he has had no charges on his record. I forget whether it was 2007 or 2009, but he's not had a charge since that time. Married this woman who works at McDonald's full-time. And it shows these poor working class people struggling to make ends meet. And so we always want to we end up vilifying people who are just trying to do better. No matter who, we don't know why he was shot. We don't know what motivated the killer to shoot this man and shoot his little girl. We don't know what happened. It could be gang-related. It could be insanity. We don't know what it is. But that's not – but the issue is what is eating alive – the soul of so many people in our own society and culture and our communities. And part of it, I really have been thinking about this ever since you said this, Donya Johnson, on our program the other week when you both were here, Takira here. When you saw the cousin, I think you said, being beaten up on the street, right?
Yep.
And then you were very upset. And you called your dad. Your dad was in jail at the time, right?
Yes.
And what did your father say when you told him about witnessing this boy being beaten up and how it really hurt you? What did he say to you?
My dad told me that was life and that's how things went and that I needed to toughen up and move on with my life. So, wow.
So and I asked you to repeat that story because I think that it's emblematic of a mental dynamic that has taken over a lot of poor communities. Yeah. And that's part of that is what has to be sorted. It's the eating away at, from the inside out.
And
that's
this
going on.
And it's sort of the dichotomy of what young people deal with on a daily basis. So as an educator, we tell kids not to fight in school, but when they go home, their mom and dad say, "You better not come back in here unless you beat or you fight that person."
Right.
And there's a level of truth to what that fighting is. That fighting doesn't have to be physical, but there's a level of truth to it. You know, Mark, I think one of the things that stood out to me as you talk about the story, I was in Chicago. We were screening our film Men to Boys at the time. Jenks and I, we were at another church, my buddy John Hanna's church. And after this, after, you know, sellout crowd, you know, it was on a rainy day in Chicago. And I remember a young man came up to me. I cannot think of his name. At the time, he worked for then the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Daley. And he walked up to me and he said, "I want to work with you." I went to another school. The next day, we screened the movie. 1,000 kids that were there. And he said, "I work for the mayor on this violence task force." And so I asked him a question. I said, "Could you tell me?" He said, "I would love to do some work with you." I said, "Well, could you tell me how many people are on the mayor's staff that keeps his calendar, basically? They keep his calendar. You know, Chicago, third largest city. He's pretty busy." This gentleman said to me, "Well, there are 5 people that's assigned to the mayor to keep his calendar." And I asked him, "How many people work with you around youth violence in Chicago?" He says, "One person." I said to him, when you can increase your staff, when you can increase the staff as the mayor has increased the staff to keep his schedule, then we can talk. But people are really playing games with our young people. You know, you learn a lot about a country by the way it treats its young people. Chicago, L.A., New York, New Orleans, all over. But Chicago is a hotbed right now because the pain we're hearing. This young lady talked about her dad. This is her father who told her, "This is how you're supposed to react." Then you have the media say, "This is how you're supposed to react." And then you have music that's saying, "This is how you're supposed to react." So we almost have to teach children how to love each other. You know, I was at a school recently, and the majority of the kids that are getting suspended are getting suspended on the playground. And one teacher says to me, "Mark," and I thought it was so powerful, as a male, he says, "Have we thought about these children don't know how to play? Why don't we teach them how to play?" Nobody ever thought about that.
That's right.
So
right,
you're working right with a group of young people that don't even know how to feel empathetic for someone at all. We feel a little sympathy, but we don't feel that empathetic piece.
Now, we talk about Chicago. Let me throw this stat out, then we'll go right to the phones. I just want to throw this out just to think about this for a moment. So there have been 43 murders in Chicago, now with this death of this poor young baby. Didn't hurt anybody, this beautiful young baby. 43 homicides in Chicago. Population of 2,707,120 people, last census. Baltimore City, 36 homicides. We have a population of 619,493 people. So we talk about an epidemic in Chicago.
Indeed.
Where's the epidemic?
Yeah.
If we're talking about almost as many murders in the city that only is 23% as big as Chicago.
Yeah. And those numbers are similar. We look at Chicago being so big, but Baltimore being so small, but the numbers are still there. And I think, you know, anybody can play around with the numbers as a researcher. You know, we know that. But in the end, our children are in pain. And I think this recent killing of Hadiyah Pendleton was such a wake-up call to not only to the president. He didn't attend the funeral, but, you know, Michelle Obama attended the funeral. Amazingly, you know, this young lady was killed after being at his inauguration. Our children are crying out for help. And if we don't put our arms around to embrace them, you know, you can't love people when you just jump out of a car, not knowing who's out there, and you begin shooting. And then you think about it later on.
That's just happened to
both of
them.
You know, so that's sort of the mindset. But again, when I was growing up, that same mindset. But by the grace of God and other people, we were able to sort of make it out of that situation.
John, you were trying to say, I'm sorry. You were trying to say something, then we'll go. I do want to open the phone to you, but please go ahead.
When a new disease kind of goes out there, then it's just all these people and all these amazing organizations that really go after finding the cure for that disease. But our streets are like are covered in blood, and I don't like, and I see power from certain places, but I feel like it's not a connected thing. And if everybody would be connected in their efforts to, you know, cure this disease, so to speak, then it would be so much more successful than if we merely individually go after this. It's not possible for one organization or one group of people or one community to go after something that is plaguing, like, America, not right. just one community, not just Baltimore, not just Chicago, not just New York. It's everywhere. And, you know, incidents like Sandy Hooks and Columbine proves that it's not just in these, it's not just in these big cities. This is something that's happening everywhere to everybody. And for us to continue to ignore it is to say that this disease is fine in our communities. And I disagree.
Let me open the phones here. That was a very powerful statement. I'm glad you're joining us tonight.
It's a great metaphor. Our streets are covered with blood. I mean, that was poetic.
It's a great metaphor. And also, Donya, I wanted Donya on here because Donya Johnson represents the youth of this city. And we always want to blanket our youth with a certain image. And we need to change that image because it's not real. 410-319-8888. Chris and Woodlawn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Chris. Welcome.
I don't want to speak specifically to one event or another because, as was stated, it does go on everywhere. But what I want to talk about is a pathway to a solution that's never discussed, and that's that you have people who have these felony records in these environments, and they don't have a pathway back into society. So what you have is people who just have a perpetual view of no way out, and they begin to affect a lot of the youth. If you talk to these youth, I used to work with the type of kids that you're talking about, and when they would go on their home visits, one of the common denominators are some of the people that they had in their backgrounds. And not all people with felony records have a totally negative view, but when that outlook begins to fester, and if you look at the communities that you're talking about, you will see a high level of people with felony records, and again, not all are doing bad things, but until you give people a pathway out, you can't see major change. These people are locked into can't get jobs, can't get housing, so they're all grouped up in certain areas and have the same negative outlook that is just perpetuated. And until that changes, and also with the advocate groups, they're almost as clannish as I don't know what, but we just really need to address, if you want to see a major change, there has to be a major change. You have so many people who have no way out. They feel things are hopeless, and then they begin to affect with a negative attitude other people who are coming up, kids, youth, whatever the case may be. There has to be a way for people to feel like, you know right. what, I can be a positive part of this society again.
So is this part of the trick bag that we face in the society, because one of the things Chris is describing is the absolute dislocation of poor working people in America and the growing numbers of people who are slipping into the poor working class and the unemployed and the underemployed, and especially affects communities of color in this country.
And in those cities, like, let's say, like a Chicago, where these situations have taken place, these are communities that have been regentrified that are pushing these poor people out. And there's still small pockets where they're trying to fight to stay alive.
All of those no different.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying, the same thing. So you're sort of pushing these folks out, but you don't have a plan for them. You haven't provided them with any extra supports. And then the only way is they're going to fight their way out, or they're going to shoot their way out, or they're going to complain their way out. So, again, what he's saying is definitely true. When you have no other recourse, when you're not given the second chance, there's so many folks that are coming out that are trying to change their lives around, but again, they don't have an opportunity. You have Ceasefire in Chicago, you know, doing some great work. The same here in Baltimore. But again, as a young lady said, there needs to be sort of like a collective effort. But I guarantee, Mark, when we look at the individuals that have done these murders, when you look at their child life, if you pull their child record, very high suspension, issues around, being labeled ADHD, all those other labels, broken homes, If we can catch those young people early, you'll see a lot of things change. But we're sort of reacting to some issues where we drop the ball on.
We have to give a very brief break. When we come back, we'll let Donya jump in and bring Benita back. We're also going to introduce our next guest coming on, Philip Jackson, who's executive director of the Black Star Project in Chicago, and read the statement from the mayor who criticized our email today, rightly so, and we'll read that when we come back. On the way to break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland's public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction, and safety, and the educators' programs and services that make our schools a national leader. That's MarylandEducators.org. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I want to remind you on our way to our conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. Before we jump right back into our conversation, I want to, because Donya has something to say, we want to introduce our guest from Chicago. Not there yet. Okay. Is that we sent out a blast today about our shows you do every day, and it mistakenly said in the blast that there was an upswing in killings of youth in Chicago and Baltimore. So the mayor's office wrote back to us and said, good afternoon. We saw tonight's show will be about the topic of youth violence, particularly, quote, unquote, the upswing in killings of youth in Chicago and Baltimore. We are not aware of an increase in juvenile homicides. In fact, youth violence in Baltimore is down. In 2012, there were 10 juvenile homicides and 15 juvenile shootings this year compared to 15 homicides and 29 non-fatal shootings in 2011, and juvenile homicides are down by more than 61% since 2008. Taking a longer view, we know that 168 children were shot in 1999 and only 15 in 2012. That is significant progress, but the mayor often says, quote, not a cause for celebration, end quote. The goal is to reduce juvenile homicides and shootings to zero. That we have been able to reduce juvenile violence significantly is reason to believe zero is a reasonable and achievable goal. Thanks, Ian Brennan, the mayor's office, the mayor's press secretary. So we want to read that, and we apologize for our miswriting in our email blast out to all of you today. So coming back to our conversation here, Benita Spikes is still with us by phone. She's
yes.
And Benita's
yes.
husband, Michael, was murdered in 1994. She is now murder victims, family members, organizer for CASE, which is the Maryland Citizens Against State Executions. She's a former OSI fellow. We're joined here in studio by Donya Johnson, who joined us a couple of weeks back. She's a junior at the Baltimore Freedom Academy and a member of the Intersection. Lamar Darnell Shields, president of the Urban Leadership Institute, founder of the Praise Academy, 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Donya, you want to say something, then we'll turn to Benita. You were about to say something before we went to break. You forgot me, because that's okay. Don't worry about it. I do that all the time. If I don't write it down, I don't remember it.
The first thing to go is that memory.
Mine went a long time ago. So, Benita.
Yeah.
You've heard the conversation so far. It was kind of hard hearing you a moment ago, but let's try that again. You want to kind of pick up where you heard the conversation leave off?
Well, I'm saying, you know, I'm really troubled by, I'm from Chicago, so it really saddens my heart, but I live and work in a lot of Prince George's County and in Baltimore City. So, I mean, it is epidemic. And I think the piece we miss, it's a lot of pieces, but I think one that we don't look at close enough is the mental health piece. A lot of our kids come from single family homes, they or are raised by the streets, and they get missed. They drop out of school because they don't get the teacher to catch them in time to keep them. I think it's a whole. I mean, really, I was just saying about what we're working on. It took a village to get us where we are now, and I think it's going to have to take a village to get these things fixed in our inner city.
We're also not just joined, who's joining us from Chicago, Philip Jackson, who is executive director of the Black Star Project in Chicago. And Philip Jackson, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having this show.
I appreciate you being with us here. Talk very quickly, if you would, for our listeners who don't know what the Black Star Project is.
The Black Star Project for 18 years has been managing a program that makes education the number one value in the African-American community. there is one program that I believe a lot of people in Baltimore know about, the Million Father March. I believe Doc Cheatham is a big supporter of that in
right.
Baltimore. And Joe Johnson works with some of the Black Star programs. So Black Star, we work nationwide, basically creating better families, better parents, better communities, and better young people. That's what we do at Black Star.
So I'm sorry, excuse me. I liked your analysis of what is happening in Chicago, because it does relate to what's going on in Baltimore as well, and the situation now since this last horrendous murder.
Right. Well, Chicago is in meltdown when it comes to violence at this point. And Chicago is a precursor much of the rest of America. And so a lot of people think, well, that's only happening in Chicago. And that is absolutely not the case.
Right.
It's happening in Baltimore, in Cleveland, in Minneapolis, in Sydney, in Omaha. It's happening across the country. And so this is what's happening in Chicago. Number one, unemployment is off the hook. There is no more cotton for Black people to pick. And there are no more jobs cleaning toilets that Black people can get. There is no more shoveling coal. And so Black people, my people, have not made the transition into the 21st century. In terms of labor market viability. And that's something we got to do. No one else is going to get, no one that I know of is going to give Black people jobs in the 21st century. We've got to learn how to create them. But number two, our children, I'm talking about Black children, Black young people, especially young Black men, they have looked at us, they have looked at our history, they've looked at how we, I'm talking about me and my generation, how we have failed to capitalize on our existence here in America or anywhere, and now they're going in a totally different direction. And so in Chicago, it's wow, wow. I heard your caller just before me. It's wow, wow. The young people today are on something totally different. It doesn't, you know, people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, they can't even comprehend what these young people are on. And so there's a whole set of rules that the young people have. And honestly, if I were growing up today, I couldn't make it. Mm. And so it's up to adults like me have failed. We had a chance to intervene. We had a chance to build institutions and to build structures that could help govern and direct and lead these young people. We failed. Now the young people have created their own structures. And their structures are destroying our community.
So a couple of quick questions here, and for all of you. I mean, and I'm going to come back to the structure question, because the actor Charles Dutton and I were talking just a couple of weeks back, just on the phone, and he had his own theory about what was going on in Chicago that I want to throw out there that I thought was interesting about what was happening with the violence. But, you know, you're talking about I think you just said, Philip Jackson, that Chicago is in meltdown.
It is.
That's what you said.
In terms of youth violence.
Right.
In terms of violence, we had 2,400 shootings last year. We had 513 murders. Violence, the kids in the schools, that's all they think about is violence, whether or not they're going to be alive. I would call that meltdown.
Now, we don't have that number of murders in Baltimore. However, I read a stat earlier in the show that I wanted to think about, because what Danya Johnson, a young person who's on our show right now, a high school student here in Baltimore City, and how she described the fear in her community just getting to and from school in Baltimore and what she thinks about it. And I'll let her describe it in her own words. But what I said before was that Baltimore has a population of a little over 619,000 people. We've had 36 killings in the city this year. Chicago has a population of a little bit more than 2.7 million people, 43 homicides in Chicago. And I'm not trying to make one better than the other, worse than the other, but the reality is, why is it not the outrage here in Baltimore about the murders taking place? They may not involve as many young people, but there are a lot of murders, don't you?
I think it's sad that it takes a lot of people to get killed, or even one person to get killed for a community to be outraged about something. I feel like if it's out there, then it should be something that's being taken care of by the people who build our communities, not just by the people who build our communities, because one time I was community organizing, and this guy from Bill said, the one person that can fix everything is the person that's going through it. And that's why I take a personal responsibility in, you know, going out in my community and helping to be a part of the movement to fix things that aren't right. But I don't know. I'm just kind of devastated that, you know, the life of children are just being stolen and taken so easily and so senselessly. It's just amazing to me. And my grandmother always speaks of a time where doors were left unlocked and where children went outside to play at midnight. And just all this stuff that I couldn't imagine happening now because of the danger and the craziness that is going on in the different places in America.
Philip, you want to comment on what you just said?
She is right. All she's doing is repeating in her words what I've just said, and I really appreciate her, or I'm repeating what she said, because the young people, they get it. They look at this and they go, oh my God, what kind of world do we live in? And she's absolutely right, and she intimated this. It's our fault. You know, I can't blame kids or young people from doing foolish things, you know, and they say, well, they're out there, they're gangbanging, they're selling. I can't blame them. I blame the adults for not creating the structures and giving the guidance and the discipline that children need in order to lead productive lives. And she's absolutely right about so many things. Number one, it shouldn't take 36 homicides. It shouldn't take 5 homicides. Any homicide in Baltimore is unacceptable, and that homicide should bring out the rage. But unfortunately, across America, there is a numbing effect. So maybe over this past weekend, maybe 8 people were shot in Baltimore, or maybe 10. It doesn't matter, because our communities start to become numb, and they start to say, oh, well, those are some more people shot. And it should never be that. Last year in Chicago, 108 children were killed. Now, wait a minute. 108
That's
children.
Unbelievable.
Were killed. Now, this is 19 and under, so I'm not just talking about
babies.
6 months old babies.
Right.
But still, these are children. This is somebody's child. And 108 of them were killed. And there's no outcry. Now, granted, when it happened at the little school, Sandy Hook, everyone, you know, across the world said, oh, those poor babies. And they are poor babies, you know, but they were poor white babies. And everybody in Chicago, just like what you saw, babies being shot in Chicago, that's not new. I mean, and a lot of people don't get it. Oh, they shot it. Babies being shot in Chicago is not new. We've had, over the past couple of years, we've had several babies killed from 1 year old to 3 year old to 6 years. So unfortunately, and by the way, God bless that angel of a baby and her family. But that's not new. And unfortunately, it hasn't, you know, many people in Chicago, they're back to business as usual already.
We want to let me get a very quick thought from a listener in here, because it's a question for Donya. We only have a few minutes left in the segment before we have to shift subjects for the rest of the hour, unfortunately, but we have to. And Ray in Baltimore, you're on the air. Ray, we only have a couple minutes left, so please go ahead.
Shift the subjects for the rest of the hour.
Ray, turn your radio down, please.
And Ray in Baltimore, you're on the air. Ray,
could you turn your radio off?
Is that me?
Turn your radio off.
Turn your radio down, please.
Okay, I'm down. Hey, I'm from D.C., and you know, my fiance is from East Baltimore, so I'm riding down from Baltimore Street right now and going across Howard Street. Let me ask the young lady: Does she have a relationship with her father? Because she mentioned something about her grandmother, but I never hear people talk about the relationship with their dad.
Okay, she talked.
Me and my daughters are extremely tight. And I never hear people say something about the father.
Okay, Donya, I mean, we did talk about Donya's dad. She talked about it a minute ago, but Donya, go ahead, and then we have to take us to break for that.
My father and I, at this moment, have a closer relationship than we have had in the past. My father was incarcerated when I was really young, about 2 years old. So I guess we have a strong relationship, but because it's a circumstantial thing, then it's not as strong as it could be.
So we have to take a break here in like 90 seconds. You want to say a closing thought, Darnell, before we
go? No, Philip, how you doing? This is Lamar, man, from Chicago, man. I'm so glad that we got you on. I mean, Philip said something that was so powerful. I think that, you know, he talked about personal accountability, that we as adults need to, you know, we need to be more accountable. It's crazy for us to ask young people to solve a problem that they didn't create.
That's right.
And until adults come together, Black Star Project is doing some awesome work in Chicago, and it should be replicated all over the country. But again, until adults take on personal responsibility, be it in the school system, the boardroom, the judicial system, we're going to still have the same issue. Yeah,
what I told them in Chicago.
Philip, we only have like a minute left. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They said, bring in the National Guard. Let's put more policemen on the streets. Let's lock them up. I said, oh, no. I said, give me more Black men on the streets. Give me more fathers in families. You know, give me more mentors. I said, and I will fix your problem. Mm. Man, they said, are you crazy? They said, we're not investing in that. Mm. They said, if your solution does not involve locking up young Black men, we're pretty much not interested. So, look, I'm clear. Go ahead.
We're running out of time here, but I want to say that I appreciate you taking your time and the work you do in Chicago as the executive director of Black Star Project. And we'd like to pick up what you just said. I'd like to have folks from Chicago and Baltimore in a discussion on this show to pick up on what Philip Jackson said. Is it more police?
Indeed.
Or is it more presence of men on the streets and more positive things going on in the community to make it work? So I will invite you back very shortly, Philip, to pick up on that point.
Thank you.
And it's a pleasure to have you with us, Bonita Spikes. Right. It's always a pleasure to have you. I'm sorry we didn't get to more of you this hour. Donya Johnson, you are the pride of our future. It's a pleasure to have you on the air with us. You're just a gem.
Thanks.
Junior at Baltimore Thanks, Freedom Lamar. Academy, member of the Intersection, and my dear friend Lamar Darnell Shields, president of the Urban Leadership Institute and founder of the Praise Academy. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
And we're going to take a brief break and come right back and look at the new Pope with a very interesting guest and what that may or may not mean for the future of the church and the world. We're going to be talking to Sister Mary Aquin O'Neill. Don't go away.